Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today, you are joining us back on Science and Paranormal with Dr. Jana and Dr. Elliot. And we are welcoming back our fantastic, incredible guest, Dr. Joseph Dillard, with his incredible method on removing drama from our lives, on discovering ourselves and understanding the world around us. On his method, Dream Sociometry. Dr. Joseph Dillard, would you please tell us a little bit about your method?
Thank you very much, Jana and Dr. Elliot. It's a pleasure to be here. And I suppose I should start by saying I don't really consider it my method because all of my best ideas have been stolen from many people over many centuries, many whose our names are not written in history books, but who passed on their heritage all the same. And so my particular presentation is built on the lives of countless other people. So I really cannot take too much credit myself for it. However, that having been said, let me give you a little bit of background for the listeners. The process that I have come to and put together, it's called the Integral Deep Listening. And it comes out of a lifelong of interest and fascination with dreams, a background in dream symbology, going back to Egyptian dream interpretation, Joseph, who interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh, also Artemidorus in Rome, who wrote a text on kind of the first dream dictionary. Then there's the work of Freud and Jung and the work of the psychic Edgar Cayce, all of whom I studied in my adolescence and in my early 20s. And then during that period of time, I led a number of dream groups in which we would get together and we would attempt to interpret dreams based on dream symbology. But I did not find the process very satisfying or personally rewarding. Because it felt as if I was, we were actually in a clothing store and the dreamer was trying on different clothes that different people thought they would look good in. And whenever the clothes felt right, then everybody decided that was the interpretation of the dream, where I was not at all sure that that was either correct or that if I made suggestions or recommendations, that they really reflected what the dream was trying to say to the person. So I had doubts. And essentially, what I did was develop a process in which one, instead of relying on the interpretations of the dreamer or the interpretations of an expert, relied primarily on interpretations elicited from characters that were embedded in the dream. If you dream about Voldemort coming after your lunch or your soul or something, well, then you would become Voldemort. You'd take the perspective of Voldemort in the dream as best as you could, and then answer a series of questions that were designed to explain Voldemort's worldview, his perception of the dream, and have him interpret it. And then one could build on that interpretation by listening to the feedback from the dreamer on what they thought of what Voldemort said, and then add your own two cents at the end based on all that information. So initially, this process involved interviewing, say, four or five characters from a dream in a process called dream sociometry. Because that was far too complicated for most dreamers who lacked the sadomasochism of an investigator like myself, I developed a single character interviewing protocol, which is what we're going to subject the poor, innocent, unsuspecting Dr. Elliot to tonight,
Unsuspecting for sure.
okay? And the functions, I should say a few more things about the general process. After initial a suspicion and doubt about taking the advice or listening to imaginary dream elements or the personifications of life issues, over a period of time of applying the recommendations in my own life and being impressed with the results, I started working with my own clients. And so I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for over 50 years now. And what I found was that it was remarkably good at ending nightmares, generally in one interview session, eliminating post-traumatic stress disorder in maybe 4 or 5 sessions, sometimes less. Not always, and not always completely, but generally so. It was also very effective at eliminating phobias like agoraphobia. And so I became fascinated and began teaching the method and working with the method. At present, I have a website called integraldeeplistening.com and a curriculum in the making based on 3 different aspects: healing, balancing, and transformation. They're all moderated or modulated with the interviewing process. The 3 healing components involve learning to what our life script is so that we no longer are controlled by its assumptions about who we are and how we need to live, eliminating toxic drama from our lives, and third, surfacing and recognizing the cognitive distortions and cognitive biases and logical fallacies that disturb our thinking and create delusional groupthink that keeps us from really seeing clearly what's true and what's false. The 3 components of the balancing aspect have to do with goal setting, assertiveness, and problem solving. The 4 components of the transformational track of the modules of the curriculum have to do with interviewing, meditation, pranayama, and the setting of personal life intent, what we want to do, what our intentions are. So, in all of these processes of the certification process, which is either a coaching practitioner and then a trainer certification process, interviewing of ourselves, interviewing of others, interviewing of dreams, interviewing of life issues, such as the knife from a stabbing pain in the back, for instance, or a pit from experiencing ourselves in a pit of despair, really depressed, for instance. So, visual metaphors for wherever we are experiencing ourselves as stuck or whatever our life issues are can be interviewed as if they were dream characters. So, with that kind of a background, what I'd like to do is to start the process by asking Dr. Elliott to provide 3 life issues.
3 current life issues?
Yeah, just whatever you find on your mind these days, things you'd like to resolve, make your life smoother.
Sure. Time management is one for sure. Financial freedom is another. I would say I'd say the third one is kind of more like prioritization of events in your life. So it kind of falls with time management as well. Those are probably my three biggest things that I would suggest right now.
Okay, very good. Now, as an aside, the reason why I asked that question is because it's the way that we test the methodology. In other words, does this process support the resolution of these 3 life issues, one of them, or 2 of them, or 3 of them, in some way or another? If it does, then there's some legitimacy that one experiences from the methodology. If one doesn't get any information that's supportive of resolution of the issues, then go somewhere else, do something else. Okay. So that's a basic issue for the whole methodology, is it's empirical, which means that it can be testable by anyone, by subjects, to see if it holds water or not, to see if it's a valid methodology or not. So thank you for those three life issues. Now, do you have a dream that you'd like to share with us?
I do have one. It's kind of an occurring theme dream. The details of it change, but it's definitely a reoccurring theme that I want to discuss with you. Do you want any details about like kind of like my background or anything like that, or do you just want to hear what the dream is?
I'd like to hear the dream, and let me, I'm going to give some asides as we go through this because it's an educational process. I'm not the dream interpreter, so I don't need to know a history like I would if I was a therapist, okay? If I was a
Yep.
therapist, I'd start with a history, and then what I would do is I would create some kind of a diagnosis and then formulate a treatment plan. That's not what this is about because I am not the interpreter. I'm not the quote therapist in this case. I'm setting myself aside in order to help you be empowered by listening to the wisdom that's innate within you, instead of needing to have all that information to formulate a plan. So what I want to do is to first hear the dream, and then after that, what I'd like to do is to get your associations to it, which is your own interpretation or your own thoughts about why you might have had it.
Okay. Yeah, sounds great. Well, one occurring dream that I have occasionally is I'm working as a police officer doing major crime work, so detective type work. And usually there's some sort of case, a serious crime, either a homicide or, like a serious kind of robbery or a very complex kind of criminal matter. And the investigation's going really well. And I'm usually partnered up with somebody. And it's really interesting since we spoke last week, and I got to learn a lot about your work. I've been dying to have this reoccurring dream again so I can start talking to the characters. But I haven't had it since we last spoke. So usually I have some sort of partner with me. It could be male, it could be female. It differs when the dream reoccurs. And then at some point we come back to the office, and all of a sudden, the tables have turned where we are, investigating this major crime, making really good headway on the leads, and then all of a sudden, the organization that I'm working for is almost treating mostly me, not so much the partner, but treating me like a suspect. Where they're kind of questioning my methods, they're picking apart the investigation, and it almost rolls into what feels like the employer's interrogating myself. And then usually I'll wake up in the morning. I will recall having that type of dream, and it kind of like, when I wake up, I kind of feel like not good, like not in a, like almost like I kind of went through something, so it kind of takes me, my morning coffee and to kind of like start thinking about the dream and analyzing it myself, and then moving on into the day from there. And this dream occurs every once in a while, occasionally. Like I said, the circumstances might be a little bit different, might have a female partner instead of a male partner, might be working a homicide instead of a robbery type case. But the main themes in the dreams, usually stay the same.
Very good. So these are the major characters in the dream. There's you, there's the crime, which could be any number of different things. There is your partner, and there is the employer, okay, and what the employer is doing to you. Now, of those characters, is there one that's most interesting to you or intriguing to you or that you're most curious about?
I would say it's the employer, and the employer is usually represented by a character in the dream. So it could be another, like a higher ranking officer or a supervisor, but also, I am curious about the partner as well, because I don't recognize them as like, it's not like somebody that I've actually worked with. It's somebody that's not familiar to me as well. So, I mean, certainly both those characters are of interest for sure.
Very cool. Well, let's start by asking questions of the supervisor or the employer, and then maybe we'll get into talking to the partner. We'll see. So, this is the name of the game. Just say the first thing that comes to your mind as to when I ask these questions. Pretend this is a stupid game and that there are no wrong answers, there are no right answers. There's just like we're kids that are playing. If you stop and think before you answer, you're probably trying to figure out what you should say. Ha ha ha. And this is
Okay.
not about that.
Okay.
Okay. This is about forgetting Dr. Elliot and about simply taking the perspective of whoever gets interviewed. Okay. So,
Sounds
for
good.
instance, the way we start is saying, well, supervisor or boss, how would you like to be referred to? Supervisor, okay. Do you have a
Yeah,
name?
supervisor's
How
good.
would you
Yeah.
like? Okay, cool. And so, supervisor, where are you in this dream? Look out at the dream through your eyes, supervisor, not through Dr. Elliott's, and describe what you're seeing and experiencing in this dream from your point of view.
From my point of view on what, like, why am I experiencing this?
Or just where you are. Are you inside the police unit
Yeah,
or
so
the employer?
usually when the encounter with the supervisor happens, it's inside
Ah, this is Elliot talking. I want you to become the supervisor and say, okay, when I'm dealing with Elliot, I'm usually in blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so from the supervisor's perspective,
From my,
usually,
that's from your perspective now. You're the supervisor, okay?
okay, so I'm the supervisor. All right, yeah, I'm coming after an employee that I have questions about.
Okay. And are you in your office or are you somewhere else, precinct headquarters or where?
It would be at a police station, in an interrogation room.
Okay, very cool. And do you like where you are? Do you dislike where you are, superintendent?
Yes, yeah, I feel very comfortable there.
And how about your role as superintendent? How do you feel about being in that role? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? Do you not care?
Like it, and also, like very matter of fact, very business-like, very business demeanor.
Gotcha. And I'm assuming you're a guy, but I'm not sure about that. And I'm wondering how old you feel like you are and how long you feel like you've been at the job.
Usually around like 20 years service, I feel, and older than me, so I'm 40. I want to say like 50 to early 50s.
Okay, so you're older than Dr. Elliot and in your early 50s. So you're an experienced guy. You feel like you are confident and know what you're doing, right?
Yep, more service as well than what I would have as Elliot. Yep.
What Elliot would have. Okay, so thank you for that, supervisor. Now, tell me, what do you like most about yourself, supervisor? What are your strengths?
I feel like my strengths would be leadership and management abilities.
Very cool. And how about any weaknesses or limitations that you have?
I would say weaknesses might not be necessarily knowing exactly how or having that experience of investigations on the ground per se. More, my background would be more like administrative, business-like rather than operational.
Got it. So you've got more of a managerial background, and therefore you may not know, be so much in touch with actual processes of investigation that
Yes.
somebody like Elliot is going through. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, good. So thank you very much for that. Now, supervisor, if you were to represent or personify some aspect of Elliot, what aspect of him might you most closely represent or personify?
I would say like both have dedication to the job.
So you'd represent his dedication to his work. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, very cool. Now, since you're an imaginary character supervisor from Elliot's dream, I want to just remind you that you have the ability to change or transform in any way that you want. You could become a duck or a female, or you could become an ascended master or an eggplant. Ha ha ha. So, in other words, since you're imaginary, you could change in any way you want, or you could just stay the same. So I'm going to ask you if you would like to change in any way, and if so, how. But I want to make sure that it's you that wants to change and not Dr. Elliot that wants you to change. Okay. So would you like to stay the same, or would you like to change, supervisor?
I'd say like I would like to change.
Okay, cool. What would you like to change about yourself in this dream? Or maybe change the whole dream, maybe change the whole thing.
The first thing that pops to my mind when I hear, the ability to change and want to change is a dog.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so supervisor, you're free to change into a dog, and we're curious, what kind of dog would you like to change into now, supervisor?
One of the small breeds, like a poodle mix, a terrier type mix, one of those types of dogs.
Okay, that's great. So change into a poodle type mix or a terrier type dog, and tell us what that's like for you.
I mean, I'm getting like a sense of like, happiness and yeah, like I guess that's the first thing that kind of pops in, just like a sense of like happiness.
Okay, that's great. And where are you? You can be anywhere you want to, dog, poodle mix, terrier. Where are you and what are you doing?
I feel like outside green grass, like really lush environment, very bright colors.
Okay, great. And are you alone, or are you with other dogs, or are there other animals around? What's going on?
I can kind of see the dog sitting in the grass. I can't really see anyone else around.
Okay, that's great. So what I'd like you to do is instead of seeing the dog sitting in the grass, be the dog sitting in the grass and tell me what that's like for you to be the dog sitting in the grass.
Still feel good, still feel happy. Can feel like the environment around me. I can kind of hear like just the wind rustling and feel like the wind on my face. Maybe some a little bit of background noise, but other than that, like it's fairly quiet. It's more the sounds of nature rather than the human interactions.
Okay, very cool. So, a dog, I'd like to ask you how you would score yourself 0 to 10 in confidence. And a zero would mean that you're a scared poodle mix or terrier. And 8 or 9 or 10 would mean that you don't have any fear. You're just a confident dog out in nature. So what kind of score would you give yourself in confidence?
I'd say a six.
Okay, very good. And why, dog?
It's almost like I feel like I am confident, but not like to the point where like I'm confident. So I do have some confidence in my, my feeling as a dog, but there's still some unsureness.
Okay, great. And do you know what that insurance is about, dog?
Almost like I'm waiting for something to happen, so I'm unsure how I'm going to respond. Is it going to be something good? Is it going to be something bad?
Gotcha. So it sounds like, and this is just to sort of check out to see if I'm hearing you right, dog. It sounds like you're vigilant. And that vigilance somehow keeps you from being completely confident. Am I hearing you correctly or no?
Yes, no, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thank you for that. And now I'd like you, dog, to score yourself 0 to 10 in compassion. And compassion is, do you care very much about other things and other people or other dogs? I mean, there aren't any other dogs around. Maybe it's not a relevant question at all. But if you care a lot, that would be like a 8 or 9 or 10. If that's just really not on your perceptual framework, that would be like a 0, 1, or a 2. So where would you score yourself 0 to 10 in compassion, dog?
Pretty high in compassion, I'd say an 8.
Okay, that's cool. And how come?
How come? That's an interesting question. I guess because that's who I am at the core of who I am, and I feel when you ask me to score the dog's compassion, I also feel that it's an 8. I feel, if I was that dog, I would still be that compassionate person that I am, which is, fairly high, and I would score it at a level 8.
Okay, dog, was that you talking or was that Dr. Elliot talking?
That it was most likely Dr. Elliot speaking, but again, like feeling if I was a dog, I feel like I would be a compassionate dog as well.
Right. So, Dr. Elliot gets to listen to his thoughts all the time and gets to talk all the time. This is a time for you to get to talk, dog. And we need to give Dr. Elliot a little practice in shutting the F up and just letting you talk because he hasn't ever talked to you before. So, you might have some interesting things to say. But we all have this habit of being in control and looking at the life out from our own perspective. So I understand, dog, why it's difficult for Dr. Elliot to be quiet and let you speak, because it's a habit, okay? But we'll see if we can help him along with this. So thank you for that explanation about compassion, dog. And I'd like to ask you how wise you feel you are, 0 to 10. With 0 means, you feel like you're not in the right place, the right time very often. And wisdom means that you feel like you are able to be in the right place at the right time to say the right thing, for things to kind of flow in your life. So, where would you score yourself, dog, 0 to 10 in that?
I'd say a 6.
Okay, very cool. And how come, dog?
I still feel that there would be, a lot more experiences to have, a lot more learning to have. Feel comfortable probably at a 6.
Okay, that's great. By the way, dog, high scores are not necessarily better. Low scores can be just as legitimate and as important as high scores. So The idea is not to kind of max out on the scores. So, in terms of acceptance of yourself, dog, and acceptance of others, nature, other dogs, whatever, how would you score yourself 0 to 10?
I'd say an 8 high.
Okay, and how come?
I would be, I just, that's the first thing that popped into my mind is that I can relate to all those characteristics. So, I feel that those characteristics, match who I am as a dog.
Very cool. Thank you so much for that. And how would you score yourself, dog, 0 to 10 in inner peace? And if you're a 0 or a 1, you're a stressed out dog. Okay. And if you're an 8 or 9 or 10, you're mellow, you feel integrated and generally hang out in the space of inner peace.
I feel at a 5.
Okay, that's great. And how come a 5 rather than a 3 or an 8 or whatever else?
It's interesting because I think as this character, I just don't know. I feel like I'm right at a 5, whereas if it was Dr. Elliot speaking, I feel he would be at a 3. He would be more stressed out than this dog, whereas this dog is kind of right in the middle, could go either way.
I am right in the middle. I could go either way.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, dog. And now, how about witnessing, dog? This is your ability to stand back and watch yourself go by, to be objective, to be mindful, to be observant. That may not be important to you at all as a dog. You may be embedded in nature and objectivity and witnessing may not be important. That would be a 0 or 1 or 2. Or it could be very important to you, and that would be an 8 or a 9 or 10. Where would you score yourself 0 to 10 in witnessing, dog?
I would say low. I feel like a 2.
Okay, that's great. And how come?
It just doesn't, yeah, it just doesn't relate to me as this character. I just don't, yeah, I feel it. I feel it's low. I feel it's 2.
Okay, terrific. So thank you very much. And dog, if you were in charge of Dr. Elliot's life, would you live it differently or would you live it just the same way that he lives it?
I'd say look at it differently.
Oh yeah, how?
I just think it would be a totally different perspective than looking at it as a dog. I just think yeah, it would be I'd love to actually experience that for a couple minutes to see what it is, but I just think it would be a totally different experience.
Well, that's great. So I'd invite you to allow yourself to experience it for a couple of minutes here, see what it's like, and to tell me what it would be like to live Dr. Elliot's life as you, dog.
I think it would be very chaotic compared to what I am as a dog experiencing. I think it would be more stressful.
So you'd prefer to just stay a dog than to be Dr. Elliot, because if you lived his life, you'd have his responsibilities and his problems and his issues, yada, yada, yada. And therefore, that would be more difficult for you, right?
Yeah, it seems like being the dog feels like you're on vacation rather than yeah, doing your
Okay.
daily grind. Yep.
Now, I got you. Thank you for that, dog. And so I'm wondering, dog, regarding Dr. Elliot's three life issues, how you would handle them differently. I believe the first might have been what, time management?
Yeah, time management. Yeah. That's a
Yeah,
good
so if you were
question.
him living his life, how would you deal with that issue, dog?
Honestly, nothing comes to mind for that. I am unsure and don't know for that one.
Yeah, I mean, you're a dog. You probably don't have much of a conception of time. You probably don't do much in the way of managing time. You know, you're in the flux of time. And so maybe time manages you, ha ha ha, instead of you managing time. I mean, if I were a dog, I
Very,
suppose that'd be true for me.
yes, very, very
Okay.
possible. And then that makes more sense that time would manage me rather than me manage time as a dog, yes.
Yeah. And then I'm wondering about Dr. Elliott's second life issue dog. That would be, I believe, had to do with priorities.
Yes, yeah. I feel like
Okay.
as a dog, I have some priorities.
What would you do about his priorities if you were in charge of his life, dog? Would you keep him the same? Would you change him?
Probably change them. That's
Oh
the
yeah?
first thing that comes to my mind.
Like,
Probably change them.
okay. So, since you're an imaginary dog and you have the ability to change anything you want, any way you want, if you're in charge of Dr. Elliot's life, how would you change his priorities?
Great question. How would I change them? I don't know. I don't know how. I
So
don't
I
know how
guess
I
it
would
means,
change them.
would you change him? Maybe that means you wouldn't change him and you just leave him the same.
I'd have to experience it, I think, and see what it's like, see how I manage it. But right now, thinking about it, I don't know how I would change it.
Right. Well, you are, I mean, Dr. Elliot created you, right? You're an aspect of him. You came out of his consciousness. So I'm assuming you know about his life. I'm assuming you know about his daily routine. I'm assuming you know about his thoughts. You know about his fears. You know about his hopes. You know about his relationships. Da 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 da. So, based on all that, would you change any of his life issues, or would you just leave them the way that they are?
Geez, I almost feel like I'd probably leave them the way that they are.
Okay, that's cool. So, dog, thank you very much for answering those questions. If what life issues would you focus on in terms of, like, you may have different life issues than Dr. Elliot since you're a dog. If you were in charge of his life, what would your life issues be?
I was in charge of Dr. Elliot. What would my life issues be? Well, I'd probably somewhat be still, concerned about daily living, I guess, is the best way to kind of round it up. You know what I mean? Like where's your next meal coming from? Who's coming over to your environment and coming into your environment? Those kind of like basic needs, I think.
Yeah. In other words, don't let me put words in your doggy mouth, dog, but it sounds to me like simplifying, just keeping things really grounded and simple, not over intellectualizing or overcomplicating things, just staying with the basics. That's kind of
Yeah,
what I'm hearing you say. Is that
yeah.
okay?
Which is
And
which I find ironic because Dr. Elliot did not make a New Year's resolution, but one of the things that Dr. Elliot did say to himself is that this year he is just going to keep things simple and see where things go.
okay. So, dog, if Dr. Elliot followed your advice and lived his life simply, more like you, more like a dog, tomorrow, today, since it's morning his time, this week, this month, this coming year, would his life be different? And if so, how?
I think so. I think there'd be less stress, more even though there's like more unknown, like unknown how things are gonna play out, I just feel like I have a real sense that there's gonna be like less stress.
That's really good because there's eustress and there's distress. We all need to have healthy stress, but distress is not such a cool thing. Health for our health, physical health, mental, emotional health. So thanks very much for that, doggy. Now, I'm wondering, thinking back about this dream, if you have any thoughts about why Dr. Elliot may have had this dream about being on this case with different partners and then coming under a sense of suspicion from his supervisor. Do you have any thoughts about why Dr. Elliott might have had that dream?
Not as a dog, no.
Okay, so it's just not important to you. So how about, why do you think that the supervisor in this dream chose to turn into you, dog? He could have turned into anything. Why do you think he turned into you?
That's true. I don't know. That's a great question. Right, could have turned into absolutely anything, and yet dog
Right.
was the strongest thing that came to mind.
So, are you glad he turned into you, or do you not care? Does it matter to you at all, dog?
I think the dog was better than the human supervisor.
I think
Yes, I so I would say yes, I am happy about that.
I am better than the human supervisor.
Yes.
Right, dog?
Yes,
Okay.
I do.
So, in what ways do you think you're better than the human supervisor, dog? Just curious.
I think I'm friendlier and have more compassion and understanding.
So, if this supervisor in the stream had your personality, your doggy characteristics, would the dream have been different? And if so, how?
I think so, yeah. I think the dream would be a lot less distressing.
How come?
I think it provides more, it well, certainly would provide more compassion, more understanding, and not feel so negative and like interrogating, I think. That's the feeling that I'm getting.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you very much for that, dog. Now, I appreciate your answering my silly questions, dog. And now I have a couple of questions for Dr. Elliot. So, welcome back, Dr. Elliot. Thank
Thanks.
you. And now I would like to ask you what you've heard yourself say, that is what you heard the supervisor and the dog say.
Well, the one thing I can definitely relate to when you were asking the questions is about the kind of what my unofficial New Year's resolution was, is the fact that to kind of don't sweat the bigger things this year. Let cards fall where they may, where they lie. And that by doing that, I feel like there would be a lot less stress and worrying. So I definitely related to that for sure. And certainly the other thing that I recognize is that the human supervisor is a lot, more interrogative and unfriendly and accusatory, whereas the dog just has like a sense of being more open, approachable, kind, diplomatic.
Gotcha. So when does that supervisor persona tend to show up in your life? And what kind of life situations are you likely to demonstrate the kinds of characteristics of that supervisor? Or maybe you don't. I don't know.
Yeah, for the most part, it doesn't show up much in my current life, but would have shown up quite a bit in my previous working life.
Okay, very cool. So, now that I've heard some of your thoughts about the dream, we've heard from the characters, the supervisor, and then what it transformed into, the dog, and then we've heard from you. Now, this is the point after we've heard those interpretations that the interviewer, in this case me, can jump in with comments and thoughts about this. So, what I'm going to do is just give you some of what came up for me with this interview, okay? It's not that it's true or it's right, it's just more grist for the mill, all right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so the first thing is that my general assumption about dreams is that while sometimes we can have very transpersonal dreams that are highly transformative, for the most part, dreams tend to be regressive. And what I mean by that is that they tend to put us back into emotional states and problem-solving strategies that we're very comfortable with based on the family of origin and the scripting that we grew up around when we were a kid, or in previous life circumstances, previous marriages, previous jobs, things like that. So your comment that you were not feeling so much like the supervisor now, but you could see that previously in your life you were in situations where that came up. This reminded me of that concept that how our dreams tend to be regressive and put us back into situations and circumstances where we're basically re-experiencing stuff that we did before. And sadly, because a lot of what we experienced early wasn't authentic for us, it was about drama and it heightened stress levels. Okay. So this is an important concept because most people don't realize that when they dream that their bodies experience stress. And stress is not just a psychological thing, it's a physiological thing where powerful neurotransmitters are pumped out into the body, as we discussed last time. And these have an
Yes.
impact on physical health. They also leave emotional residue when we wake up, whether we remember our dreams or not, which means that if you have a stressful dream, even if you don't remember it, you're more likely to wake up with that reinforced, maybe a sense of being on edge, a little bit more vigilant, less at peace, more anxious, maybe a little more reactive to what things people say to you, blah, 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 that kind of thing. So the
Yes.
point there is that the content of our dreams really does make a difference, whether we remember them or not. And part of what integral deep listening interviewing does is it surfaces this process so that we can look at it and we decide what we want to do about it, number one. But number two, just the process of practicing deep listening in an integral sort of way helps to resolve it. In other words, in my experience, you're less likely to have this dream again as a result of just becoming the supervisor or listening to how it wanted to change, listening to what the change is. And the reason why is because you're really being empathetic with the source of some major unresolved stressors in your life. We don't have to know exactly what those are, why you continued to repeat that dream, okay? But the main thing is that we reduce that stress so that moving forward in your life, you're less burdened with that. And so I think the dog probably represents a visual metaphor for the frame of mind to have going forward that's an antidote to that chronic stressor, okay? Now, if you come to me as a client and we had chatted and talked and I'd done my normal therapeutic thing, I probably wouldn't have figured that out. And we might have worked for weeks, for months, and we wouldn't have gotten to the bottom of it. And the reason why is because I'm not you, and I'm just going to project my own interpretations onto experience. But when we work with this process, we cut to the chase because we're listening to what's going on inside of you, not what I think. Okay. And so the whole idea is just by going through that process, it's therapeutic and intrinsically healing and balancing and transformative. So you are A, less likely to have the dream in the future. B, you're better, more likely to sleep better. C, you're more likely to wake up feeling more like a happy dog, living life simply, than unnecessarily complicating your life. Okay. It's not going to be perfect. This is not a cure-all by any means. But you can start to see how, if one practices and does this process over a period of time, how it's going to clean out a whole lot of toxic drama. It's going to clean out a lot of toxic scripting. It's going to basically free us up to make better decisions and to be able to enjoy our relationships and our life more.
Very fascinating. I know even at the end, I even felt like more well, more co like more confident and more like ready to take on some of the world's problems. Just for me when I, kind of dissecting that dream. Yeah, very, very, very fascinating.
The key is to really stay in the persona of the dog in this case, because the dog is the magic. The dog is the holder of that particular worldview that's therapeutic for you in relationship to these life stressors that produce the dream. That's the theory. And the whole idea is that you test that theory by A, becoming the dog and seeing if that really does make a difference in your life or not. And B, trying on its recommendations. That basically means attempting to simplify your life and to see if your life really does improve or not. So instead of listening to me or believing what I say, what I love about the method is that if a person takes it seriously and actually employs the recommendations, they can build their own sense of authenticity and truth. Instead of having to rely on an external source. Okay, so it's a self-empowering process.
Very, very interesting.
It is a self-empowering process, and I remember myself having that interview. And to tell you the truth, I was even crying because of the things that I was finding about myself. And Dr.
I
Dillard,
love to make people cry.
you know what? Everybody leaves my office crying. Which is a good thing. That's a good thing. That means that we're clearing what we need to clear and understand about ourselves and the world around us. And I was, and this was such a profoundly interesting experience. And I love learning about myself. And that was very instrumental. And I went deep into my own subconscious and I spoke to it in a conscious way without even putting myself under hypnosis, right? That the normally that would probably happen. And that was in an awakened state. So that was really nice. I was able to deal with procrastination, time management as well. I'm still working on time management though. And also not to set so many walls around myself and let people in because I wasn't so easily trusting people, which is not a bad thing, but at the same time, it was affecting my life. But now it's much better, thanks to Dr. Dillard.
We're all much more alike than we are different. We all have issues with organization and time management and self-esteem, confidence issues. Everybody's a lot more similar than we are different. And the issue is that the more we get out of our own way, the more time, energy, and awareness we have available to be of service to others, to listen to others respectfully, to reciprocate in our relationships rather than always trying to win or to be one up or to control, to be trustworthy, and also to empathize. This method teaches empathy. By becoming the supervisor and then the dog, you're strengthening that empathy muscle. Okay. That's why I kept on harassing Dr. Elliot about who's talking. Okay. Because the way we're not used to this kind of deep empathy of really standing in the shoes of another perspective. And this methodology teaches that kind of deep empathy, which is fundamental to being a healthy human as opposed to a predatory animal. And I'm afraid that a lot of people in the world, for a lot of different reasons, are acting like predatory animals that are demonstrating no empathy whatsoever. So, but that can change. And this methodology, that's one of its purposes, is to teach these skills to people so they can teach them to their family members, their friends, their fiancés, whoever, so that they can build a support system. We call it their sangha, which is a Buddhist word that means spiritual community. Okay. So we're developing two sanghas, a external support community based on authenticity and intimacy as we share interviewing with them and get to know them as they really are, and they get to know us as we really are. And then we're building an internal sangha as we get to know the dogs in our life and learn to become them and internalize them and become more dog-like and may have them become parts of us that are real and authentic and enhance the quality of our life. So building both the internal, the microcosmic, and the external macrocosmic support communities are necessary. We need to do both. And this methodology is designed to do that.
And not only that, to become more compassionate and empathetic to other people, I think this method also teaches us to be empathetic to ourselves and learn a lot about ourselves as
Absolutely.
well.
And certainly speaking for myself, I grew up being very self-critical. And it took me quite a while to outgrow that. Okay. But it could have been a lot faster if I'd known about this early on in my life. And that's one of the reasons why I want people to teach this to children, is because children can avoid a great deal of unnecessary drama and grief if they learn how to get in touch with their emerging potentials and also their own authentic life compass or sense of priorities that aren't due to the scripting, familial, social, cultural scripting, but are authentic for who they need to grow into.
That is so important because even as parents, we condition our children to what they actually want to go and do once they leave our parental home, when it is our own scripting that we write for our kids.
That's right. We're afraid. We want them to grow up to be happy and healthy, but we're afraid they won't. And so it's inevitable that we're going to, let's just say, project our needs and our hopes and our fears onto them. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but if we don't understand we're doing that, then we're just going to pass on our scripting from our parents onto the next generation, and they'll pass that on to the next generation. So, how do we break that chain? Okay. It's more important than a karmic chain. Okay. As far as I'm concerned, the scripting chain is a real chaining, and it needs to be broken, and it has to be broken if the world's going to evolve into a humanistic society that means a caring society based on empathy and respecting one another.
Well, so many futuristic books are actually written on that, building a society like this that would be so incredible in the ideal world. However, our human nature gets in the way every single time. But
That's right.
we should strive to build a better world on our own spot. We try to change the world without changing ourselves first. We have to start with ourselves.
We know you're reminding me of Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, which is a line that he took from an Abraham Lincoln speech. And it's his book actually is a very detailed analysis of how humans have outgrown the quantity of violence over the centuries. And a lot of people disagree with this thesis. I happen to agree with it, that warfare has become less frequent and less violent over time. Although, a lot of people find that an incomprehensible statement to make. I understand. But the better angel of our nature means to amplify those aspects of ourselves that are healthy. And that's what integral deep listening attempts to do, is to get people in touch with the aspects of themselves that are healthy, and to amplify them in their awareness, and convince them that they can live a life based on those relationships and those values, rather than whatever society might tell them they need to do.
That's so true. But Dr. Dillard, you mentioned that the pranayama is also a part of your methodology. Could you tell us something about it? I'm very curious.
Of course, it would be my pleasure. But let me start by asking you a question. How many parts do you have to a breath? When you breathe, how many parts are there?
Inhale, exhale, and we don't think about it. It's
Right.
an automatic
So
process.
that's the answer. That's the answer that I had for years, and what makes a lot of sense. There's two parts, inhalation and exhalation. There you go. Simple. All right. But think about this. When you're sleeping, all your breathing is automatic, done by the autonomic nervous system. In fact, when we're not thinking about our breathing, that's mostly what our breathing is. It's automatic. That means it's diaphragmatic breathing. Your diaphragm goes down on inhalation, bringing air into the lungs, and then it goes up on exhalation to exhale air. That's how animals breathe. That's how we breathe when we're not thinking about it. It's automatic breathing. So that's one type of inhalation, but there's another type of inhalation. I just chose to inhale. Now, that's a lung inhalation. That's not a diaphragmatic inhalation. It's a conscious inhalation. It's two types of inhalation. Okay? Same thing with exhalation. We can not think about it, and our diaphragm can work, and we can automatically do diaphragmatic breathing, or we can choose consciously to exhale. So, guess what? Now, instead of two parts of our breath, we've got four parts. We've got a diaphragmatic inhalation, and we've got a chest inhalation. We've got a chest exhalation, and we have a diaphragmatic exhalation, right? But that's not all. If you really stop and look at it, after you inhale with a complete inhalation, diaphragmatic, and then chest, there's a pause, just like you've climbed a mountain and you're stopping and surveying the horizon and the sunset, whatever, before you descend. Okay? Then you descend from the mountaintop, you exhale, chest exhalation, then abdominal exhalation. And then, guess what? There's a longer pause at the bottom before you inhale again. So, really, the way it works is there's some people say even more, but I will go with six. You have abdominal inhalation, chest inhalation, short pause at the top. Then you have a chest exhalation because air has to leave the chest before it can leave the lower parts of the lungs, the lobes of the lungs. So chest exhalation, then abdominal exhalation, and then you have a longer pause. Now, what's cool about this is that that's a microcosmic reflection of the round of every day, of the seasons, of your entire life, all in one breath. So that's what integral deep listening pranayama is about. It teaches people to observe all six of those aspects of breath, which is a meditative exercise. It takes your mind off of whatever drama is going on in your life to do that. It takes some work to do it. That's one part of it. Another part of it is that it grounds you in your body. You become a healthy, non-thinking animal. You get in touch just with your physical sense of who you are by just observing the round of your breath. That's very powerful. Another thing that it does is it puts you in sync with the cycles of your life. For instance, abdominal inhalation is like waking up in your morning in the morning because you're breathing new life into your body whenever you have an abdominal inhalation. Your chest inhalation is excess oxygen for doing work. So that's more like getting about the day's work and getting things done. The pause at the top is when things are more in sync and going automatically. The chest exhalation is more when you stop work and you're relaxing, eating dinner, watching TV, checking your social media, blah, blah, blah. And then what happens is that as you get ready to bed and you're shutting down and you're giving away the day and your sense of identity, it's like abdominal exhalation. Then the pause at the bottom of the breath is like being asleep at night. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that the same rhythm happens in your entire life. There's being born, there's getting about your life's work, there's getting into a harmony or a balance with your life, there is retirement, there is preparation for death, and then there is death. So the whole idea of teaching pranayama is basically a meditative tool. It's a stress management tool, and it's a way of integrating microcosm and macrocosm. So I've written a whole book that explains seven levels of integration that are associated with this six component of every breath process. It talks about the history of pranayama, the Hindu roots of it, and how it's evolved over time. So anyway, that's one of the modules in the Integral Deep Listening certification program, is to teach people this seven level approach to working with one's breath as a tool for healing, balance, and integration and transformation.
That is so exciting. When do you anticipate for it to be ready, for the whole curriculum to be done?
I'm not sure. I'm working hard on it. I have some interns who I'm going to, they're going to be my mouse in the hamster wheel, who are going to try it out as I develop it. First, I'll finish the coaching curriculum, and then I will move on to the practitioner and the trainer curriculum. I hate to commit myself, but I'm hoping that I'll have the coaching track ready for them to trial within 2 to 3 months. I think that's, I have to kind of be objective about my own priorities and my own focus. But that feels right now. Maybe by sometime in the spring, I'll be ready to have people go through that to trial it and give me feedback so I can improve it and get it ready for the general public.
That is so exciting. And you are also a psychotherapist in private practice in Germany, but the people can contact you from anywhere, and you work with the people from anywhere in the world.
Oh yes, so wonderful about Zoom and Skype and gee, here I am. I'm out in the country in my country cabin in Brandenburg, about 30 kilometers from both Potsdam and Berlin. And thanks to Elon Musk's Starlink, I've got a great internet connection out here in the Lake Country where there are deer and wild boar and everything.
But no dogs. Oh yes, you have a one big
Oh, I
dog
have.
as well. You do.
I definitely. He's my supervisor, okay? He makes sure I stay on the straight and narrow.
That's right. He's keeping you straight.
That's
That's
awesome.
right.
Well,
Yeah,
that
and maybe next time, Dr. Elliot, if we ever do an interview again, we can interview Gosher.
For sure. For sure.
That
Now,
is
he's
so
laughing because he
interesting.
gets this joke, but I don't know if Dr. Yana gets the joke.
I didn't get the joke. I didn't go the what little gophers? Well, I don't know.
Dr. Elliot, I'll let you explain.
Yeah, Gozer from Ghostbusters because I got Stay Puft and Slimer behind me.
Ah, that's what it is. I
Yeah.
should watch the movie because I should have gotten a joke. Interesting. But you know
Yeah.
what? When I moved to the United States, it was so difficult for me to even to understand the jokes because mostly what we do, we laugh at ourselves and the society that we're in, those are the inside jokes for us. It's like, tell me when people would tell a joke, all right? Like, tell me when I'm supposed to laugh. And then, like, at least to pretend that it was funny. But now I get it more. But I didn't get it because it was the inside joke for that movie.
How
Right.
old were you when you came over to the United States, Jana?
Was 24.
And when did you learn English?
Oh, English. I started learning a long time before then. At school, we start learning English at I think in the fourth grade. And then I
And
went to
I guess your native language is Russian.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, well, I really admire that. I admire you're great at English, and yet you're bilingual, and you have the ability to dip into Russian literature, etc. So,
Also, English. That's how I went to study English literature and the English language. So that's I'm a linguist and philologist, so English and Russian literature.
that's so fabulous.
And then I also dig in human minds. I love digging. And
Oh.
metaphorically speaking, that you were just dissecting Dr. Elliot's dream. And to me, it is a very interesting narrative, because that's what the literature is all about. You tell the story, and our subconscious is telling the story to us about us, and we just need to listen to it in a symbolic
And
language.
here poor Dr. Elliot thought that he was free of his years of work as in the police department. And then what happens? He goes to sleep and he goes right back into that reality, but he's not getting paid for it. Yeah,
No.
what a terrible thing.
I've been a dog.
Yeah, that's so true.
I think it's cool to turn one supervisor into a dog. I know a number of supervisors I've had in the past. I'd love to turn into dogs. A number of politicians, too. They'd definitely be a whole healthier and better if they were dogs. No doubt about it.
You know what?
Definitely.
They are the types of dogs, probably like Chihuahuas, right? If you look at them, some are just Chihuahuas.
Good point.
And some will also pretend to be Great Danes when they're not, when they have a little Chihuahua sitting inside of them and living inside of them. So.
I
True.
think you're right. Okay, so do you guys have any other questions for me about any people deep listening or any part of it? Anything that I can share with you or with the audience that might be helpful? Be delighted if there's anything.
Definitely
So,
your contact information. Yeah, any
mm-hmm.
websites or email addresses you have in case any of the listeners want to get in touch with you, find out more about your research and where any of your books are available for sale.
Well, second question, the books, one can go to Amazon.com and look at my name, and most of them can pop up. They mostly are there, but I think I have a few that are elsewhere. Anyway, I would try that. In terms of contacting me, Joseph dot Dillard, Dillard, at gmail.com. Anybody can write me. I'd be more than delighted to hear from you. And also my website, integraldeeplistening.com, is where you can get all kinds of information about dreams, the certification programs, all of these different areas like pranayama or meditation or scripting or stress management that you're interested in.
And not only that, there are a lot of other interesting publications that I found incredibly interesting to read. And not only I, and also friends of mine as well, they dig into your writings, and we happen to support your points of view. So thank you so very much.
You're basically referring to my essays at integralworld.net. And what I should say about that is that integral and integral deep listening refers to the work of philosopher Ken Wilber and the particular integrative model, multi-perspectival model that he developed, which I have found very useful, but which I've also critiqued in many different ways. So basically, at integralworld.net, there's all kinds of issues regarding integral. Plus, there's articles that I'm going to be putting together into a book if I'm ever crazy enough and live long enough to do it. There's articles on Tibetan dream yoga, which is very interesting, on Indian Svapna dream yoga. There's articles on shamanism, on Jung's shadow work, Gestalt. All of these are basically explaining the relationship of these different approaches to my own, to integral deep listening. So it's kind of a comparison contrast sort of approach. So those articles, those essays can be found at integralworld.net.
Well, since you mentioned that, and now we're gonna dare you to publish it, put it all together and publish it for us.
First we need to make a double of me. We need to figure out how to clone another of me, because I've got so many projects in the hopper. I'd love to get that one done, but I've got to get this old horse in gear, this old mule in gear, and get cracking and get this curriculum project finished. I've got a great team. We're moving forward, and hopefully that's what I'm going to be completing in 2024.
That is fantastic. And you have the entire zoo there, as I can see, and the mules and the dogs and everything. Deer. So, well, that was
Absolutely.
fantastic. We learned so much about the Dr. Elliot today, right? If we dove
Yes.
into his subconscious mind, and we learned that subconsciously he just want to be a dog sitting on the green lawn doing nothing.
Just being patted all
Well,
day on
you
the head.
know, I just have to say that one of the things about this interviewing process is that if you do it with somebody, and particularly if you exchange interviews, for instance, I have Dr. Elliot interview me, the result is the development of a degree of authenticity and intimacy in a relationship that is rare. In other words, I know Dr. Elliot now in certain kinds of intimate and deep ways that probably a lot of people don't see or get to know about him. Okay. So what he has shared with me is very precious. It's
Now the whole world is
kind
gonna
of
know
like
now.
a it's a gift, okay? And it's a very sacred sort of a sharing as far as I'm concerned. And so I'm just saying, whenever one learns this and then shares it with somebody else and they interview you and you interview them, it breaks beneath the drama and the scripting, and it gets people much more in touch with each other. I've worked with couples, and it's amazing the way one can break through conflicts in relationships. People start to understand why they have communication problems, what they think they're saying to the other person versus what the other person is hearing, for instance, their own blocks that they did not recognize before that now they can see clearly, things like that. So that's another application that I found very useful with the process.
That's it, Dr.
Yes.
Elliot. You are absolutely now famous to the entire world. The entire world can just dive into your subconscious mind. Now that's it. Your quiet life is over. Now we're all gonna know so much about you.
Excellent.
Well, it was such an interesting experience. And thank you so much, Dr. Dillard, for joining us today. I know that you have so much going on, and you carved out this time to be with us today and do the dream dissection of Dr. Elliott's. So
Yeah,
we're
thank
deeply
you very
grateful
much.
to
That
you.
was it was very, very fascinating. I enjoyed both of our conversations that we've had, and I'll definitely continue to follow your work.
And we hope to see
And
you
in terms
again.
of the paranormal and science, I would say that any method that's empirical, that means that you can test in your life, is scientific. And that's what integral deep listening attempts to be. And in terms of the paranormal, we get closer to the paranormal in our dreams than in any other time in our life, for the most part, for most people, most of the time. So if one wants to really develop a healthy relationship with the paranormal, learning to pay attention to your dreams and to work with them and to listen to them is really an excellent way to do so. So I just wanted to close by tying into the basic theme of what you all are attempting to communicate and present in your whole series of presentations. And thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show.
Thank you very much, and we hope to see you back again. And one day to see you in person.
That would be my pleasure. Thank you, dear.
Well, thank you very much. And I could see that you were leaning down and down. There's a pillow right next to you, and it's already evening. So you're probably getting ready to go to sleep. And like, okay, we're seeing the bed and the pillow, more of that. We better let you go. All right. Well, big hugs.
Normally it's Dr. Yana and I staying up very late to do these
Right?
shows.
I don't have
Not
a
so
bed
much the
near.
guests.
Now it's you.
One of the great things about Zoom is that you don't have to get dressed and go to an office in order to do stuff. I can do stuff just from my comfortable everyday life environment. People can sort of see me in my natural habitat. Ha 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 ha.
Natural habitat, just like all of your zoo animals. So you just feel so happy and content there.
Absolutely.
Well,
Thank you
have a
guys
good
so
night.
much. I plan
And
on
we'll
it.
see you
You
again.
guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye
Bye.
bye.